What really gets my dick hard is...
Welcome to Metal of Your Podcast, episode 18. I am Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And this week we are doing a full episode on Kirk Hammett.
He deserves it.
He does. I think after all these years of hazing, it's time he got his own episode.
He deserves an hour of our time.
It's more than he got on the Hardwired album, so.
Oh.
Sorry.
Did you
that's what happens when you lose 200 song ideas.
250. Did you plan that joke, by the way?
Did I what?
Did you plan that joke? Did you plan the joke?
No, I didn't plan that joke. No, no.
Came off pretty good.
Thank you.
It's pretty good.
It's still fresh in the noodle, I guess. So, but yeah, no, it's time. We have done, obviously, member episodes, but we haven't done an episode on a current member of Metallica. We've done Cliff. We've done Jason. So this is the first current lineup Metallica member episode.
Feels good.
It feels great. I feel wonderful right now. Got some Nag Champa burning at Metallica HQ. Metallica HQ. Don't get cocky.
We're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
Give us till September.
Let me rewind. We've got some nice incense burning at Metal Up Your Podcast HQ.
And we're not drinking passion fruit vodka, but we are drinking some variant of
vodka.
We've
graduated. Clint, let's go ahead and talk about it real quick. Clint went ahead and picked up Burnett's vodka, quadruple distilled for superior smoothness.
I wish I could say that's why I chose it, but the truth is I'm just like a redneck.
You saw the price tag.
And when I go, yeah, I saw how big the bottle was and the price tag and all of that computed in my redneck brain.
You're like, sounds like I need to bring this to
and I bought that.
To the podcast. Yeah, totally. Well, I back it. I mean, with vodka, it's, you know, we usually have the Skull vodka and it's like, you know, it's crappy vodka, but it tastes like vodka.
Let's give a shout out to our mixers here, our trusty mixers also.
Oh, yeah. I back this stuff.
Which we are not paid to say this, by the way.
And we're not paid to say this yet.
Ooh.
But Reed's Ginger Ale. If you haven't had Reed's Ginger Ale, let me tell you, a cool, crisp... I can't do it. I was trying to do a commercial.
When you're listening to Kill 'Em All...
You know, yeah, you could do like those old Bill Murray commercials he did in Lost in Translation. You know, it's like, whenever I'm listening to Master of Puppets, I like to... sit back and pour a cool glass of Reed's Raspberry Ginger Ale. The thirst. Feels like cool mountain air hitting your esophagus.
Quench the thirst of the metal gods. It's like drinking the tears of metal gods.
No, I always buy the stuff, Reed's Ginger Ale, and they make a raspberry flavored one, and it's delicious.
They probably listen to the show. So.
Oh, I'm sure they are. Reed's, if you're listening, you can definitely sponsor our show, because we drink your shit every week.
So we're going to start off the episode, as we usually do, reading some fan stuff, as we mentioned on our S&M episode, which we got a lot of great response.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. That was actually our best first week so far, too.
Our best first week so far.
Best first week so far.
We got a bunch of cool emails to read. As we mentioned, though, on that episode, we've pared it down. We're only going to read 10 emails a week now because we're so goddamn famous.
Yeah, it's tough, guys. You have no idea.
So if you do want to get your thing read on the show, which even if we don't read it on the show, we read all the emails and we try to respond to all of them. But that's the best way to do it, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com.
Yep.
Before we read some emails, we're going to read our next 10 winners of the Guitar Pick contest.
Yes. And we did on the last episode, we did our first 10, and there's still three of you out there that haven't sent us your mailing address.
So. Yeah, but when we burn them all down, we're going to do one last pitch to get the people who haven't sent us their address. After that, I think the window's got to close.
Yeah, I mean, get on it. All you're doing is delaying the process for everyone else to get their picks.
It's selfish, really.
It's very selfish.
So here are our next 10 winners. If you hear your name, and by the way, if you don't know, if this happens to somehow be the first episode you listen to, Ethan and I are doing a contest where we're giving away 5 guitar picks, one with Ethan's face on it, one with my
delicious
face on it, and 3 Metal Up Your Podcast picks to anyone who leaves us a positive iTunes review.
Yeah,
Those iTunes reviews really go a long way to helping our podcast get more visible and have more ears.
Correct.
So even if you want to do it out of just the goodness of your own heart and not because you're going to get these badass picks.
Yeah, you don't always have to do something for something in return.
Yeah, come on, dudes.
Just have a heart. It's Easter.
It's real simple. It takes a few minutes. You go to iTunes.com, you find our thing, you look up our thing, find the thing, do the thing.
And then we'll send you the thing.
And then we'll send you the things.
The things.
Here are our next 10 winners. If you hear your name, you need to send an email to metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com with the phrase pick contest in the subject with your address.
Yep.
And if you're uncomfortable sending us your personal address, because like we're going to send you like arsenic or something.
Or anthrax.
Anthrax. Is Anthrax what I was looking
for? It just sounds more metal because it's a band. Yeah.
We're going to actually send you the band Anthrax.
Yeah, Scott Ian's going to come in the mail. Yeah.
You're just going to see that little purple beard coming out of an envelope. If you're uncomfortable sending us your actual home address, send us like a PO box or your work address, whatever the fuck you want to do.
Yeah, we don't care.
All we want to do is get these goddamn pics to you.
Yeah.
Here are the happy Easter, by the way.
Happy Easter. He is risen indeed.
Here are the next 10 winners. Metallica 08, AMR Costandi, M. Benice, M. Benice?
Benice.
94, Ohio Joey. Wonder where he's from.
New Jersey.
Duh.
Yeah.
T. Danny B. Josh Stupid. Which, dude, don't slag yourself like that, man.
I have a feeling it's because he spells stupid with two O's. Maybe he likes the band Slightly Stupid.
Oh.
Which I don't care for.
Well, I've never even heard of them, so.
It's fine. You don't have to listen to them.
Josh Stupid, 12-GA, which that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
CSBBB89, CENZO316, CENZO316, and Ollie Lopez.
Congratulations, guys. You are the winner of 5 picks.
Brought to you by Reed's Ginger Ale.
And Burnett's Vodka, quadruple filtered for, what is it?
For superior
smoothness. We got to get these ads down before we start getting paid for them.
I know, shit. All right, you want to read our first email?
Yeah, let's get us some emails. This one right here is from Nick Makoviak. Makoviak. I'm so bad at this
Makuricum.
Shit. Hey, Ethan and Clint. Long-time listener, first-time writer. I love when people do that. I absolutely love your show, as I'm somewhat of a podcast junkie and, of course, a huge Metallica fan. I know that there are other music podcasts out there like Eddie Trunk Show, but I love the natural chemistry you guys have and the laid-back vibe. That's the Nag Champa right there.
Mm.
Keep up the great work. And thank you. We will.
Very Nick. Cool. We're going to try. We're doing it right now, actually.
Yeah.
We're keeping up the great work right now.
Yeah. Sponsored by Nag Champa.
The next email comes from Jason Berry. Hey, Clint and Ethan, I've really been enjoying the show. I listen while I'm at work, and today I checked out the Fleming episode and loved how it just kicked right off with a good old-fashioned session of the church giggles.
That can happen.
Like many others have said, this podcast has given me a newfound appreciation for Metallica, so much so that I actually sang Fuel at karaoke this past weekend, and it rocked.
Nice.
Keep up the good work.
Jason, nice work. Singing Fuel at karaoke.
Let me ask you this. What's your go-to Metallica song for karaoke?
I don't know that I've actually sang a Metallica song karaoke, because what I like to do is just get as ridiculous as I can. So my go-tos are usually like Maneater by Hall & Oates, but I'm also a Hall & Oates fan.
Me too.
Or something really ridiculous, like Courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue by Toby Keith.
Whoa.
Just so I could say, we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would boo you.
Good. Thank you. Goal achieved. Goal achieved.
I would actually boo that. My go-to is Kiss by Prince.
Oh,
I do it
one.
All falsetto. I do a little rap in the middle.
Really? Nice.
If I had to pick a Metallica, if you had to pick one, you know, like, I'd probably pick For Whom the Bell Tolls.
I would pick something that would be slightly in my range so I could try to do a decent job at it.
What's the 19-minute song on Lulu? Would you do that one?
I would just do all of Lulu.
People would just be fucking pelting you with rotten
that bar
fruit.
Would lose so much money that night. I feel like I would do something, like, might be kind of fun to try, like, Unforgiven or something.
Oh, you'd go real, real serious.
Maybe go
real
serious, ballad, yeah.
Just
hold a lighter up and shit. All right, our next email comes from Nick Roller. What's up, dudes? I love that kind of stuff. Just discovered the podcast yesterday, looking for stuff on Newstead. Guess my first episode was. I've been listening constantly and catching up. Never gets old hearing people discuss Metallica. Keep it up. P.S. I would like to donate. Cannot locate the dollar sign. That's what we talked about on our metalupyourpodcast.com. If you want to whore it out, you have to guide me in.
Wow.
That sounds so sexual.
Strong flavor.
Yeah, we actually changed our minds on donating through littlepeoplepodcast.com because it was just, there was so much shit you had to put in as far as like your bank account information. I just didn't feel comfortable with that. So we do patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. We've already had a few patrons, which we can't thank you enough. We are going to get to reading some of those names in the next episode, just to, of course, express our thanks for that. So, yeah, Nick Roller, if you want to donate, patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast.
Yep. And I want to echo Ethan there. For those of you who have already done it, which we've had several so far, thank you so much, dudes. It's so cool. We're so grateful.
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan Burnside says, "Dear Torben and Dave."
Hello, Jonathan.
Hello, Jonathan. It's me, Jonathan.
That's probably all he was hoping for.
I'd like to hear your thoughts on Beatallica. As a fan of both.
I know this.
As a fan of both the Beatles and Metallica, I think they're hilarious, but I know a lot of hardcore fans are haters. I've not heard it.
After we finish recording this, I'll play you some.
Okay, is it pretty good?
Having a hard drive. It's,
because Ethan and I are Beatle freaks, too.
Okay, so I wouldn't say like, oh my gosh, you have to hear it, as in it's this amazing quality thing. Like, it's not like when you listen to Apocalyptica doing Metallica.
Right, it's like beautiful.
It's this beautiful thing. This is, it's parody.
Sure.
So they're basically doing Beatles songs in the style of Metallica.
Love it.
So if I remember right, they have one called like Sergeant Hetfield's Lonely Hearts Club
Love
Band.
It.
And the dude can do a really good Hetfield.
Cool.
Yeah, so I'll play it for you afterwards.
Well, he says, Hey Dude is a masterpiece.
Oh, that's right.
So they have one called Hey Dude.
It's been a while. He sent us a YouTube link too.
Hey Dude.
It's been a while since I've listened to that stuff, so we'll have to go through it after
been
this.
Been a while. Were you just about to sing a Stain song?
It's been a while.
He says, while moving, I've been taking a weekly 5-hour trip through Sierra Nevada mountains, and the Metal Up Your Podcast show makes the trip that much more bearable. Keep it up. Thanks. Oh, this is the dude from Tone Tubby Speakers. Do you know this
you
dude?
Probably may. Yeah, Jonathan's a buddy of mine. From we toured together years ago. He works for a company called Tone Tubby Speakers.
Which they make cabinets and stuff.
Yeah, they make hemp speakers.
Which is really cool.
It's really cool, yeah. Yeah, he was at the NAMM show this last summer.
Okay.
You were probably, we went, I think after going to NAMM, me and Jack all went to this place called Mickey's Tavern here in Nashville.
Oh, I probably met
and
him.
And he was there too. He was actually there schooling all these dudes at pool. He's a total badass. He's a pool shark.
I suck at pool.
Jonathan does not.
Jonathan, I will never play you in pool. I actually went to this website. For our listeners out there who are musicians, go check out tonetubby.com. We're not being paid to say that.
Nope.
Yet again.
Yet. No pressure, Burnside.
But anyway, that's cool. Thanks, Jonathan. Glad that your trips through Sierra Nevada mountains are made more bearable by our podcast. That's very cool.
Yeah, man. Very cool. All right, next email is from Eric Thomas. I think I figured out why Ethan forgot the Outlaw Torn was on S&M. Did you really? Oh, Metallica, you tricksters, you can't fool us. You probably thought that since we're all metalheads that we wouldn't notice that you covered Natalie Imbruglia's song Torn. You can't just put The Outlaw in front of the title and expect us not to pick up on what you did there. Of course, I'm just kidding. Another great episode, guys. Also, I have to agree with another listener about the production on Garage Days Revisited. That just got to be one of my favorite mixes from the guys. Definitely my favorite from the Jason era.
Hmm.
I would probably disagree. I like the production. It's very raw. It's still coming out of that. They're still in that thrash era. You know, they're coming off of Puppet. So it's a lot more exposed sounding and dry-ish sounding. But it sounds killer. But I would say my favorite Jason production would be the Black Album.
I've still just got, nothing's fine, I'm torn. I'm all out of faith.
What a babe, by the way, too.
Well, what a song. I think that's a killer song.
Totally. Eric, thanks for the email. And I think I agree with you. See, I was assuming it was Natalie Imbruglia's Torn. So
that explains so much about so many things.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what I should mention too is because Revisited is Jody Havnot from Podcast Rock City's favorite Metallica record.
Yeah.
And I did an episode of Podcast Rock City, which is,
if you guys haven't listened to that, or if you're even if you're not a Kiss fan, Clint was just on a recent episode of theirs and it's awesome.
Yeah, the Podcast Rock City dudes, it's a Kiss podcast of the band Kiss. It's my favorite. Unlike Metallica, somehow, Kiss has like a million podcasts. And yeah. I listen to all of them, but Podcast Rock City is my favorite, so check that one out. The episode I'm on is called Unplugged 2.
Yeah.
Okay. Tristan Corbellari Says, hey, Ethan and Clint, as we all know, Metallica's been killing it lately in the live department. They just finished up some shows in Mexico City, and some of the performances they put up on their YouTube channel sound really good as far as mixing goes, way better than all their usual live stuff. They even just re-uploaded the live premiere of Dream No More with way better audio than before. The drums in particular are drastically better. I noticed that and thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
Because of all this and the fact that they played three shows in Mexico City rather than just one, lots of people in the forums and Reddit have been speculating there's going to be a Hardwired live DVD, something along the lines of the Mexico City DVD they released on the World Magnetic Tour in 2009. Do you think this will happen? We'd love to know your thoughts, and keep on doing great with the podcast.
Wow. I will point out first that I have noticed that like the audio production for what they put online has gotten a lot better. It's not as direct sounding. It's more live sounding.
But is that an indication they're going to make, like, I get it. I think they have done that too. Like when they re-uploaded Dream No More, I was like, that's weird. And then I listened to it and was like, holy shit, this is great.
Maybe they just weren't happy with the mix when they, you know, somebody saw it on YouTube or whatever. And they're like, you know, Hetfield's like, can we remix that?
I don't know if it necessarily means they're, because I feel like if they were doing a DVD, which by the way, it's totally possible they are.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they would be uploading that onto the Met channel.
I'd imagine if they were going to do a live worldwide tour DVD, they'd probably select a couple cities to really do it in, up the production, all that stuff. And here's the thing too, Metallica is traveling with obviously full on production, video screens, full camera crew, all that stuff. Essentially, and this is what, you know, when I tour with Kings of Leon, this is what they do every night too. I mean, there's a camera crew. As an audience member, you're looking up these big screens, and all that stuff's being recorded on a drive backstage. So you could release a live DVD from any show you did.
Right.
They have that. They're recording that much content every night. It's not like it's just there for the live feed so people in the audience can see it. That's all being stored.
Sure.
You know, so by the time this whole tour cycle ends, they're going to have at least 10 gigabytes of video.
Right, but if they culled it from a million shows, they wouldn't be able to say, like, live from Mexico City.
Right.
Which they have, obviously a really cool history with that town. And
I also love that you didn't pick up on my at least 10 megabytes of footage. Sorry, computer talk.
Because that's not a lot of footage.
It's not a lot of
footage. Yeah, that's a good joke. I picked up on it.
Oh, man.
Well, I actually thought they were going to do when they did the four nights in Copenhagen, I thought that they were doing the four nights there because it would be like live from Copenhagen would be so killer.
They might still release it.
You well, that was the one of the shows James is really sick. Then they missed
the
show.
Yeah, and
then on his show back, it was like he was at like 80%.
Yeah. All right. Next email is from Curse with a K. Hey, guys, I have no friends that I can talk Metallica with. So when I happened upon your show, I was overjoyed. Keep up the great work. Well, hey, Curse, we are happy we're here for you.
You can talk to us about
it. You can always talk to us.
And by talk to us, I mean you can listen to us talk.
And then send an email that maybe we'll read again.
Which is the hallmark of any healthy relationship.
It really is. Just listen to us.
Kyle Sautar. Says, hey guys, greetings from Canada. Loving the podcast every week. As a guitar player myself, it's great to hear two other musicians talk about Metallica in depth. Anyways, keep it up.
We will.
Thanks, dude.
From Canada, eh? It's great.
What's that all about?
It's all about.
That's our only Canada joke.
It is cool to hear from other musicians that are noticing that, you know, when we talk about different parts on albums and songs that, you know, I think it's getting through to some people out there. There might be non-musicians that are like, well, what are they talking about? F minor?
Yeah. But I think we try to temper it, you know, because I do think some of our listeners aren't maybe bored by that kind of stuff.
And, yeah.
You know, you guys, if you guys were a fly on the wall for some of the hangs I have with Ethan, we could really go real deep on some of the more technical shit on that.
All right, our last email is from Brad Blazik. Ooh. Anyone with a Z in their name, I think it's pretty big.
He sounds like a wrestler.
Yeah, it's true. And his opponent weighing in at 325 pounds.
Brad Blazik.
Blazik.
Monday.
Monday. Now we're getting into monster trucks.
Oh, shit.
All right. Hey, guys. I think I'm addicted to the show. Well, you know, you can seek help for that. I just discovered it a couple weeks back, and I've burned through all the episodes since then. I usually listen to a lot of other pods, but they're all piling up since I started yours. Nice. Keep up the great work. By the way, I live in Paris, Tennessee, just about 2 hours from Nashville. It's kind of cool that you guys are local and not in LA or New York or somewhere like that. Man, that's really cool. I've got a funny quick story about Paris, Tennessee. So my wife, her and some girlfriends went to Paris a couple summers ago, and I guess this would have been a year or two ago. We discovered there was a Paris, Tennessee, and they have a small Eiffel Tower there.
Aww.
It's way smaller and you can't go up on it and it's like way thinner looking, but there's like a park in front of it.
Is it made out of like Legos or something?
I think it's Legos, yeah. It's that or like coat hangers.
Coat hangers.
No, but I was out of town for it, but my wife was sending me pictures that her and her friends went down to Paris, Tennessee and pretended like they were in Paris and they went and brought like wine and like cheese.
Nice.
And laid on a blanket and hung out in front of the tiny Eiffel Tower. And then they went to some little pool hall and hung out and played pool for a while.
Yeah.
And apparently it's a cool little town. We should go check it out sometime.
Hmm.
Maybe a podcast episode from the Eiffel Tower in Paris.
From the coat hanger tower.
Yeah. But no, that's cool. Yeah. And I guess we are kind of local for you, even though it's 2 hours away. But we're all part of the mid-state.
The mid-state.
Yeah, but like that's our last email from Blazik.
Brad Blazik. It is Brad, right?
Yeah, Brad.
Brad, okay.
Double B, man.
Double B, BB.
Well, let's get into some Kirk Hammett.
Let's talk Kirk Hammett.
Yeah. The Dainty Orphan.
The Dainty Orphan, as some meme says.
I was trying to get that straight face.
Which, here's the deal, he's not an orphan.
No, he's not an orphan, he has parents.
He is dainty, though.
He's a little dainty.
I don't know what dainty means.
I think dainty is just kind of small, frail, maybe kind of fragile.
He does seem like a bit of a fragile individual.
Yeah.
For the lead guitar player in the biggest metal band of all time, he is kind of dainty.
He's a little dainty. I mean, you may disagree with me here. I think you do, actually. Especially like his outfits lately, I think are a little dainty.
Love them.
You like the hostess or host at a restaurant look?
I never tweet at celebrities ever.
You did. I saw it.
But I totally tweeted at him. I was like, dude, you're looking fucking killer.
Now you did it from our account, which yeah, I was like, okay, Clint didn't get my approval for this.
I knew you wouldn't dig it.
I'm not back in the whole like vest with like his like paisley shirts or polka dot shirts or whatever he's wearing. It just looks like he's like a table for two, you know?
He looks sharp, dude. He does look
sharp.
He looks dapper. He looks debonair.
He's in Metallica. Now,
he's also 54 years old.
Okay.
And he's a rich man.
He's also probably like, you know what? This is just comfortable.
I don't know if it's that comfortable.
It can be. That vest is pretty tight.
It's made out of like.
Now, I will say this. I'm not totally knocking it because I will take that over Trujillo's. Like, I just got done with basketball practice thing.
See, that's probably what he's doing. He's like, he's got to balance out stage left from the goddamn basketball player over on stage right.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe so, but I don't know. I'm still on Team Hetfield. You know this. I will take his freaking battle vest any day.
I know, dude. And then there's one that he has several, but he wears the one that says like, brother, you know, we miss you, brother Cliff.
I think it says
brother
Cliff. Rest in peace, R.I.P. Brother. Yeah, brother. Yeah,
so cool.
It's so good.
Should we do some Kirk Hammett facts?
Let's do some Kirk Hammett facts. Yeah,
we're gonna do some facts. I think we're gonna be able to like riff off a bunch of these facts. Then at the end of the episode, we're gonna do. Which one are we going to do first?
I think what we're going to start with is we're going to basically go down. It's not necessarily a top 10, but we're going to pick our what we think are like the best solos from each record.
Right.
And then after that, we'll do our top 5 favorite solos.
And we're going to invite you, as we usually do, to send us your top 5 Kirk Hammett guitar solos.
Yeah. And I kind of hope someone sends one that's not Kirk Hammett and see how much of a Metallica fan they are.
Ooh.
What if they're like, see, I don't want to say anything just in case someone out there is like, oh, I know what song I want to say.
Yeah.
But
all right. So let's do some facts. Let's do some Kirk Hammett facts.
Kirk Hammett facts.
Born November 18th, 1962. He's 54 years old, by the way. In San Francisco, raised in El Sobrante, California. Do you know where that is?
I don't exactly. My wife would know because she's from the Bay Area. But I think it's kind of a suburb of San Francisco in the East Bay.
And in contrast to the orphan, our dainty orphan comment, he has two parents that had him naturally.
Yeah.
He's of Filipino and Irish ancestry, which I never knew that. I never knew he was Filipino.
I
kind of
see the Filipino in him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got that olive skin, lush olive skin.
Beautiful olive skin.
And it actually, in that case, I think it really helps him age well. Filipinos age really well. I've got a friend who's Filipino who is 48 now, I think.
Yeah.
And he looks dynamite, let me tell you.
Dynamite.
He does.
That was a great, great word choice.
Thank you.
He looks fucking dynamite.
Yeah. You could say that about Kirk's recent outfits.
You could say that dynamite. About, you could say that about me.
You look dynamite in your shorts right now. In your shoes.
I'm
kind of
going through this weird phase where I'm wearing shorts a lot.
I back it.
Which, as a guitar player, I haven't worn shorts in like 25 years.
Really? That long?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I wear shorts about every day once it gets warm out. But I grew up in Southern California. That's just what you did.
Dude, I haven't seen my legs since I was like 8 years old.
There's hair on them. Did you see that?
Nope.
Yeah, that's right. I can see it.
I'm just looking at them for the first time. Yeah, weird. There is hair on them. Which, you know, gray, Kirk's like kind of gone gray now, but I think it looks awesome.
It looks cool. It's very Gandalf. Like, he's getting really wise, you know?
You just love bringing in Lord of the Rings into this shit.
Hey, man. Have I done it before?
Torben.
Oh, with the whole staff thing. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, yeah, Torben. Yeah. Torben is kind of Gandalf.
I'm not knocking.
Torben is the Gandalf of Metallica. Let's just at least say that.
What is Kirk then?
Yes, I think I am the Gandalf of Metallica.
Hello, Gandalf. Gandalf or Gandalf? Where do you stand on that?
In the movie, it's pronounced both ways. Like, sometimes you'll hear, like, Gandalf. And at least people say
so
Gandalf.
So there's no consensus is what we're saying.
I mean, I'm not that big of a Lord of the Rings nerd where I'm like, well, actually, it's a... Someone listening probably is, and that's fine, and I love those movies. But I just say Gandalf.
All right, cool.
It sounds weird to go Gandalf.
I know, I agree.
Gandalf.
Grand elf. Grand elf.
He kind of is the grand elf.
But he's not an elf.
He's not.
Except the fact that he's not an elf.
I think you should get back on topic, guys.
Okay. This was interesting. I didn't know this. He met Les Claypool in Primus in high school, and they've been friends ever since. Well, they went to the same high school.
You know, that's how Les Claypool originally got the audition.
It's because they were just like buds.
They were buddies, yeah. And he asked him, Kirk asked him to come in and do the audition. And, you know, the story goes that he was just too good, you know. But he was also, I mean, he's Les Claypool. I mean, he's a bass player from outer space.
I think saying he was too good was a nice way of saying he wasn't a good fit.
I think you're right, yeah.
Which, no disrespect. I mean, Les Claypool is... consummate amazing musician.
Oh, he's an incredible
sure.
musician, but yeah,
but I can't imagine him in Metallica.
No, not at all.
Okay, early influences were Hendrix, Zeppelin, and UFO, which he's going on the record saying UFO is his favorite band.
Really, his favorite band?
Favorite band?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, pretty cool.
I mean, yeah, obviously great influences to have as a guitar player, especially when you're talking about Hendrix and, you know, fucking Led Zeppelin, of course. Jimmy Page,
no shit. Yeah. And you know, I think he's and he's similar. We'll probably get into this as we go through his career, but he's similar to Jimmy Page in the sense that. Especially his work in the 80s and early 90s, it was so... I said Jimmy Page, right? He's similar to Jimmy Page in
yes.
that. Iconic stuff. As long as people listen to heavy music or hard rock music, people are going to be caring about what Kirk Hammett did in the 80s and early 90s.
Right.
And like Jimmy Page in the 70s, like it's kind of Sloppy Joe, right?
Yeah, dude, there's a lot of Led Zeppelin stuff that's very sloppy.
It's Sloppy Joe.
It's still cool.
It's the shit. It's like the yeah, best in the world, but it's like sloppy, you know? And that's just interesting to see that that's kind of the world he comes from. He picked up his first guitar at age 15. He bought a guitar out of the Montgomery Ward catalog special that came with a 4-inch speaker in a shoebox for an amp.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Do you know what Montgomery Ward is?
No clue.
It's kind of like a department store.
Like a Sears catalog?
Like, it's like a Sears, yeah, where they have like everything from clothing to like power tools to washers and dryers. My first guitar was purchased at a department store. I think it was Sears.
Yeah.
So I got that
going. I'm going to go ahead and guess that the quality of that guitar was
not great. It was a brand called Memphis.
Yeah. I like that.
Didn't know where Memphis was, but I was 11 years old. And actually, my dad's in town right now. And we were just talking about this the other day. I got that guitar, and about a month or two in, it already didn't hold tuning, by the way.
Sure.
Had a whammy bar, but wow, not like a Floyd Rose thing. And you'd do it, and it would just be all out of tune. But right. I remember I would get really excited to walk around the house with like my guitar strap on, and like I was like, you know, in a band.
Yeah.
Just like
doing some of the mirror playing. You
totally
were playing in front of the mirror?
Yeah,
you have
I
to.
Did. Yes, of course.
Yeah, I mean, do it.
How do you think I do what I do now? You think I look this good on accident? Jeez. But I was at the top of our staircase in our house in Orange County, and didn't have strap locks or anything. And all of a sudden, the strap button just came out of the guitar, and that thing went tumbling down the stairs, and the headstock broke off.
Yeah, of course it did.
And I cried.
You cried, really?
I actually cried. I mean, I was an 11-year-old kid, and that was my first guitar.
This
I
was like 2 weeks ago.
It was 2 weeks ago. It was my Guild Starfire 5, and I was really crying hard. But... No, anyways, that's yeah. All that to say is that I also got my first guitar at a department store.
My first guitar was a mail order guitar from AMS, American Music Supply.
Nice.
The white Stratocaster.
Fender or Squire?
Fender. But
really?
This is back before, gosh, I don't know if anyone can remember this, but it was a Squire guitar, but it wasn't when Squire was on the headstock. Fender was on the headstock, but on the little bulb of the headstock, it would say made by Squire.
That's right, yeah.
And it was like, they were like more expensive Squires.
That's cool.
But the idea of like buying a guitar in the mail now is so insane to me.
I mean, I've done it.
Well, I mean, buying a guitar, like a used, like I've bought a guitar that like was like, I bought a 62 Tele.
Right.
But through eBay, I communicated with the seller.
Yeah.
I wasn't buying like a brand new guitar from God knows where, the AMS warehouse somewhere.
But like, I mean, would you say that like nowadays, like if you ordered a guitar through Guitar Center, is that the same thing? Or
I probably wouldn't order a guitar through Guitar Center online.
I have.
You have?
Yeah, that Fender Coronado back there.
And it's a good experience. Oh, that guitar is rad.
That's awesome, man.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I had a great experience. Sponsored by GuitarCenter.com.
Hey.
This Sunday, the last sale of the century. Save on strat packs.
Strat packs. Dude, I worked in a guitar store for 8 years. I sold a lot of fucking strat packs.
Yeah, well, man, there's a lot out there.
Okay.
Speaking of strats,
his kind of first real guitar was a strat copy, and then he got what became the iconic 74 Gibson Flying V.
He played that for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was his nicest guitar.
Yeah.
I thought this was funny. He worked at Burger King long enough to buy a Marshall amplifier.
That's a lot of shifts.
Well, I guess depending on what he got. And
I mean, what would minimum wage have been back then?
I don't know. It's 25 cents.
25 cents an hour. And then Marshalls would probably cost about $100 back then. If my math is correct. No, but still, I mean, that's cool. I mean, that's what, I don't know about you, but like for me, like when I had like jobs in high school, you know, even before I had a car, it's like, what am I going to spend money on other than like hitting up Taco Bell or 7-Eleven with my buddies? I would save up for something for gear, you know, tuner,
dude,
or something,
totally.
You know,
when I bought that guitar with AMS, I was like, well, then I bought the guitar before I had an amp. And the amp I bought was this little 8-inch speaker Squire amp. And it was
Squire 15.
Yeah.
That was my first amp too.
No shit.
Yep.
And it was $100. So I was like, well, I'm going to go mow lawns in my neighborhood for $10. My parents were like proud. They were like, yeah, he's going to go earn it, you know?
Yeah.
As soon as I mowed that 10th lawn, I was done. I was out of the lawn mowing
business.
You
ran into the music store with like grass clippings on your shirt. And
for sure. And my parents are like, well, don't you want to like keep mowing lawns and like make more money? And I was like, no.
Well, I got the amp. Why would I do that?
I only did this as long as I could.
And then you
to.
Broke a guitar string. You're like, oh, shit.
Shit, I can do one more lawn. In 1979, at the age of 16, so young, he formed the band Exodus, which was an influential Bay Area thrash band.
Oh, definitely. I mean, like, yeah, they're obviously predating Metallica in that scene.
I wonder if when Metallica went up to San Francisco, if the Exodus dudes, like, before they all became friends, the Exodus dudes were, like, kind of bummed.
Like, yo, dude, this is our turf.
This is our turf, bro.
My Bay Area, man. We're Bay Area thrash.
But going back to that Dainty Orphan thing, I don't think old Kirk was going to be the guy to like stand his ground on that.
No, but obviously won in the end. You know, I'm sure they were cool. I mean, I don't think that there was a thrash scene up there, but it wasn't like, I mean, obviously they moved up there and everything was fine, and they were just immediately a part of it.
I think at that time it was just like if you were like in the club, you were in the club.
Totally.
You know,
absolutely.
What's next on the old fact list?
Well, as we fast forward a little bit, he flew to Rochester, New York to audition for Metallica in May 1983.
Yeah.
And goodbye, Dave.
Bye. You'll never see me again.
God, what a trip, though. I mean, you know, they discovered him through Exodus, and all of a sudden he's on a flight to New York. I mean, I feel like he probably had the gig at that point, because when they arrived in New York, they immediately fired him, or fired Mustaine.
Right.
You know, I mean, sure, he showed up and like, hey, here's what I can do. But like,
I think they already knew of Exodus and they liked Exodus. They'd shared bills with Exodus
right
in San Francisco. And I think that when he showed up, he kind of had done his homework and they were like, all right, we got a show next week.
Yeah.
Let's do the show. And then he's just been the dude ever since.
And by the way, we're about to record our first record.
Which is kind of amazing. It says a lot about Kirk, I think.
It does. I mean, the one downside, I don't know, maybe it's a downside for him, it would be for me, is that, you know, they probably jumped in the studio fast enough where they're like, hey, man, you got to learn all Dave's shit.
But I can also see that also might have been relieving for him on the front end, because there wasn't a lot of pressure for him to bring a lot of creative shit to the table.
Yeah, or like, you know, improvise a lot and come up with solos and stuff.
Yeah,
there is stuff that he did on the record that, you know, that wasn't there before, but, you know, with Dave, but, you know, like the Four Horsemen Bridge and stuff like that. But
I think the real test was when they, well, A, getting out really on the road.
Yeah.
And seeing how he could hang on the road and perform on the road, which he obviously was impressive then. But then the shit he, I mean, he had like 4 or 5 co-writes on Lightning.
Yeah.
I mean, he brought a lot to the table.
Yeah. So, he
from then on, you know.
Totally. Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to get into this later, but he is responsible for arguably Metallica's most popular song.
Oh, yeah.
He wrote the Inner Sandman riff.
Yep. He definitely did.
So he's like launched into that rocket ship, you know, out of Exodus. But at the time, he was taking lessons from Joe Satriani, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Those of you who don't know Joe Satriani, which I think anyone in Metallica who likes Metallica knows
who that is.
Surfing
with the Alien, man.
Surfing the Alien is one of the most important sort of guitar rock.
It's like, I just call it guitar nerd rock. It's just...
It's like, you know, like building on the shoulders of like the Jeff Beck Blow by Blow.
Yeah, it's like in that world.
It's an all-instrumental...
Yeah.
It's pretty rad.
It's pretty rad. It's not something that I'm like, I get in the car, I go run to the store, I'm like, yo, Surfing with the Alien. You know, like I just...
Well, but Summer Song was really big. That song Midnight that he does the double tapping on. Yeah. It's real clean.
Totally.
Always With Me, Always With You in my high school talent show.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
1 second place.
Is that on video somewhere?
No. Dude, this is back in the mid to late 90s. People didn't just record everything.
Well, people had camcorders.
No, we had them, but it just wasn't like a huge part of culture.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, it's a talent show. Your parents should have been proud. And been
I don't
like...
even think my parents went.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. and Mrs. Wells, you missed out on a pivotal moment in your son's musical career.
And this is why I cry myself to sleep every night.
I knew it, dude.
Listening to Joe Satriani's
records.
That's
why you call me at 2 a.m. every night. Like,
I'm just remembering they didn't come.
So I could hear Surfing with the Alien playing in the background. And oh, man. And another interesting fact is that he was Joe Satriani's final student.
Ooh.
So I didn't want to teach anymore.
Well, I think as Kirk was joining Metallica and that thing was kind of happening, he had just released Surfing with the Alien and it was doing well.
He's like, gotta go on the road, dude. You're on your own.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, Kirk did all right for himself after that.
Yeah.
He did okay. He wrote some pretty cool parts.
He did okay.
Yeah.
Our boy Kirk did okay.
Just okay. I already hate this next fact because it's just sad.
It is sad.
It is very sad.
It's sad, but it's true.
It's sad, but you know what? I mean, I guess nothing else matters after this. the next thing here is, you know, Burton picked the Ace of Spades and chose Kirk's bunk.
Right.
Thus, leading to Cliff's death.
Which just opens up the inevitable questions of, what if it had been Kirk who died in that bus crash? And not Cliff.
We wouldn't have Enter Sandman.
We wouldn't have Enter Sandman.
Yeah. We wouldn't have a lot of things.
But would we have other things we don't even know we don't have?
Yes, we would. It's another one of those, could be on a part two of a what if episode, but yeah. I mean, it's hard to imagine after all these years having Metallica without Kirk Hammett.
For sure. I mean,
obviously.
I've just been thinking about it a lot since the what if episode. And for me, I do think that if he were to split, they'd replace Kirk, but I don't think I could hang in there with it. I've got to have him.
Yeah, I mean, as much as, you know, there's moments to kind of like poke fun and stuff, or, you know, about him losing 250 ideas, all that crap. And even as a guitar player, I think has kind of gone downhill in the last 10 years.
It
or
has.
Something.
I mean, it has. It has. Pains me to say it, but it has.
I know, it pains me as well. He's been there since. Not the full-on beginning, but pretty much the beginning. I mean, he's been there since right before the first record.
I think if you're on the first record, you're original gangster.
Yeah, I think so, too.
If someone were to say, like, no, dude, Dave's original, I'm like, nah, I couldn't give a shit about that.
Yeah, Dave played on a cassette.
Yeah.
I mean, Kill 'Em All was on cassette, too, but you know what I'm saying.
Well, Kill 'Em All was on vinyl.
It's on vinyl, yeah. It was on Spotify in 83.
It was on MySpace in 1984.
Totally. I mean, imagine, you know, the guilt you would feel if you're Kirk Hammett.
Dude, that's
not
gotta
that it's
be
your
rough.
Fault, but you all decide, hey, let's draw cards for this bunk space. Oh, I want your bunk, Kirk. And then that happens. I mean, you've gotta be, I mean, beyond a wreck. I mean, I couldn't imagine what I would feel.
I would say
like it should be me.
Yeah, it would haunt me for sure. Maybe the silver lining, though, and Kirk does seem like a silver lining kind of dude, a spiritually aware.
I think so. He's a very zen kind of guy.
You know, the positive spin of that is that, you know, you're grateful for every moment you have.
Agreed. Yeah.
So
totally.
Which is pretty cool. Speaking of like what's positive and cool about Kirk, like in the height of when Metallica did the Black Album, it took over the world. They toured it for, I don't know, 75 years straight.
I think it was 76.
76 years straight. The 76 year leg Black Album tour that would never go away. in between that tour, when that tour ended and when they started working on Load, he actually went back to school.
That's pretty rad.
And studied film, which he's a huge horror film nerd.
Oh, yeah. If you don't follow him on like Twitter and Instagram, he's way into horror stuff.
Well, he has that book. What's his Too Much Horror Business?
Yeah.
That he put out. That's like
it's
about
a nice Misfits reference too. That's like horror business.
That's like, you know, it's like a documentation of his collection, his memorabilia.
Yeah, he's probably got some cool shit.
Well, he has like the head prop from Reanimator, like the severed head.
Wow.
The Stuart Gordon film. He has like the Bela Lugosi like costumes, and he's got a bunch of cool shit.
That's cool.
What's the show that Metallica did, which I'm riffing here, I'm off script here.
Oh, you're off script.
I didn't write this down. The show where they were, I think it was when Bob Rock played with them in the club, where I think they were making Saint Anger, and they were like, let's just go do a club show. And they didn't have a bass player.
I'm not sure where that was. I know they did when they did the whole, they did another show outdoors, like on a flatbed truck with Bob Rock on bass. And I think it was in the Bay Area.
This was like in a club, and like they all agreed to meet at Kirk's house right before the gig. And they're all kind of nervous. And Lars is like, God, why did I agree to do this? They just went in this club and played like Sabbath True and shit. It killed.
Yeah.
But they were like super nervous to be playing. But it was interesting because they're meeting at Kirk's house, and like James is like, they're like in like the lobby of Kirk's, and Kirk just has this whole table full of like Neanderthal skulls.
Yeah.
And James is like, this is interesting.
And also surprising, like James has never been to his house or something.
Like, it's kind of like that. It's kind of like James is like in Kirk's private world and kind of like being respectful, but also kind of being like, this is kind of weird.
What if he was like, oh, I see.
This is weird, Kirk.
This is why I've been, this answers so many questions.
But Kirk's like, yeah, these skulls are like actual skulls from like this period. He's like super knowledgeable and into it. And James's hands in his pockets like, cool. This is cool,
man. Bro. You got any hot rods?
You're going to need like,
hey man, give me fuel.
Give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
Give me elk skulls or give me taxidermy.
Elk skulls.
Okay. We talked about his book that he did, which is cool that he did that book. I haven't checked it out.
I haven't either, but I'm
sure. I'm a huge horror fan.
Yeah. Yeah. Write to us, email us and let us know if you've read that book and if it's cool, if it's worth checking out. Should we
even do an episode on it?
No. Maybe we'll both read it and then do a revisited.
Well, it's just a book of pictures.
Oh, I like pictures.
It's a picture book.
Oh, easy. I'm in. I'll buy it.
Requires very little reading.
Yeah.
I actually think this is awesome. He does a actual con. He does like a horror con.
Which would be really fun to go to.
God damn it. We should go.
Yeah.
The Kirk von Hammett's Fear Fest Evil.
Festival.
Pretty cool.
Very cool.
Because I guess when they did Orion, he had all... Because Lars is also a big film nerd. So Lars had his like film tent.
Okay.
And then Kirk had his crypt, which was like his memorabilia.
Yeah.
So like he says that based on like the fun experience he had putting all that together, he wanted to start a convention.
I think that's awesome. Why not? I mean, it's at the Regency Ballroom in San Francisco, which isn't like, I mean, you're doing a con. Most of those times they're at convention centers and stuff, but the Regency Ballroom, I don't know what the cap is, but I'm guessing a couple thousand.
Yeah. And it was over 3 days.
That's awesome.
And they did the thing that we talked about on the Pirate Satellite episode that you and I did where like Heather Langenkamp from Nightmare on Elm Street went.
Yeah. That's great.
They had like Tom Savini who did a lot of the like makeup and shit.
I'm in the Bay Area quite a bit throughout the year because my wife is from there. And if that's ever happening while I'm there, I'll be like, hey, I'm going to go head into the city and go check this out.
And buy my friend Clint $1,000 plane ticket to come see it too.
I got some miles I can fly out.
I got miles too.
Oh, well, fine. Fuck you and your miles. I'm saving mine.
How dare you assume I don't have miles accrued?
I don't know. You do a lot of bus touring.
I fly a lot, dude.
Oh, you do?
I actually don't have that many miles. That's pretty much all the facts, really.
I mean, those are all, I think, facts worth mentioning. I mean, of course, there's a million...
No, those are all literally all the facts about his life.
That's all we know about Kirk Hammett. That was everything. We're not sure. We don't even know what records he played on.
Nope.
No.
He actually has guested on a lot of records.
Yeah, he has guested on records. You know...
Which, let me ask you this about that.
Okay.
So, the whole Jason Echo Brain thing, right?
Yeah.
Big deal. I get it. Jason asked for a year off. He wanted to actually push a band. Q Prime was interested. I get it. It was a different deal.
Sure.
But do you think that James was ever bummed that Kirk was going over here and doing the Spawn soundtrack or guesting on this or that, collaborating with other people?
I don't think so, because he's not committing to anything.
Yeah.
Jason was like, I mean, this was a commitment. Not that it would ever destroy the huge machine that is Metallica, but like, yeah, let's take a year off so I can go tour Echo Brain. That's different than Kirk spending a day or two in a studio, like recording a lead to some, you know, for somebody, or, you know what I mean? Like he's not putting this, you know, time and effort into something that's going to last a year.
Well, it was
even a week.
That's true. Like for him to go, for his friends in a metal band in the Bay Area to call up and say, hey, come play on a song. Like, right. That's real different. I get it.
Yeah, sure. I'll be there, you know, for a couple hours.
But during Some Kind of Monster, when James disappeared to go to rehab, Kirk, that's when Kirk first started talking about doing a solo record. I wonder what James, obviously James was away, probably wasn't even privy to that information. I wonder if James would have come back and been like, I don't know, dude.
I think at that time in the band's history, yeah, he probably would have a problem with it because he was in the middle of the Jason stuff too. But I'd also imagine that Jason was a bit bigger of a personality than Kirk.
He's the
guy that hangs back a lot. And I could see him doing a solo record, let's say back then, and then, you know, hey, going to the guys, hey guys, I'm doing the solo record. I might do some shows, but it's nothing. Like, I'm just, you know, whatever our schedule is, I'll work around.
What would a Kirk Hammett solo show look like?
Look like?
Yeah, aesthetically.
Aesthetically.
No, I meant in general.
Would it be like in a club?
I think he would do it.
I mean, what's he going to do above a club? He's not going to do an arena tour with just Kirk Hammett.
And he wouldn't do like a shed or anything?
No, not at all. I think he would do clubs. And I think he would incorporate a lot of his love of horror in it.
Yeah.
Like for maybe stage props or just like the look, you know, lighting and things like that.
He comes out just dressed as Dracula.
I mean, totally. But he could, you know, call it Kirk's Crypt or something, or, you know, yeah. And I don't know if I would be down for a Kirk Hammett solo record.
How many wah pedals do you think are on the stage for the Kirk solo show?
The solo show, at least 15.
Yeah, gotta have 15.
Yeah. I think every two steps. Because you take one step, and then the next step is your wah foot, so you put that up.
Like, you know when you're walking on stage, and, like, a TM, like, has, like, the little flashlight, like, his, like, walkway to the stage is just all wah pedals.
Yeah. Just in case, like, he wants to start the show backstage or something.
Just everywhere he steps is, like, a wah.
That's one of those things with Kirk's guitar playing that, like, I mean, I love...
Yeah, let's start talking about that. Let's start getting into that.
Of course, yeah. Like, I do love his guitar playing. I do think it's suffered in the last decade or so, maybe longer.
Since Saint Anger.
I mean, really, you could say before Saint Anger, there wasn't really any leads on that record, you know? So...
Yeah, I mean, like, from Saint Anger on...
Yeah, totally. I think that kind of killed something for him. Maybe killed some creativity or whatever. But I mean, it's pretty undeniable that, I mean, that guy left some huge marks in Metallica songs where, I mean, completely unforgettable solos, you know.
For sure. Everything some of the best, like, metal solos of all time.
Totally. Everything from Master Puppets, Battery, you know, Disposable Blackened, Heroes. Blackened,
Creeping Death.
Unforgiven. The list goes on. He's done some cool stuff. I mean, stuff that I, you know, still can't play. I mean, like, my hands just don't operate that fast.
And even to the opposite end of the spectrum of, like, maybe I could play the Fuel solo, which in fact I know I can play it, but what's most indelible to me is that I can sing it to you. Like,
right.
And the Memory Remains solo and, like, the Unforgiven 2 solo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of stuff that, I mean, I think it goes to show that somebody's doing a really good job as a musician. Excuse me. If you can sing their parts.
I agree.
You know, you might not be able to play it, but you can sing that.
Well, Prince has this great quote where someone once asked him, you know, what's the secret of being a great lead guitar player? And he said, go listen to Aretha Franklin.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, which that's kind of like cool sage really advice. Cool.
Yeah, totally.
And it seems like, obviously, Saint Anger, there were no guitar solos, but right. It seems like from Death Magnetic on, he's been doing this sort of like improv blues fast thing where he's kind of, it's real repetitive, it's real unmemorable,
it's very unmemorable,
it's very not special.
It really sounds like, I mean, and all that stuff about him losing all these 250 ideas aside, it sounds like he is improvising in the studio to come up with something cool, and they're just piecing it together later, because it's just boring, you know. I love the Hardwired record, it's the best thing they've done
fucking killer.
In a long time,
right?
And that's the main downside to it, are Kirk's solos. There's a couple good ones on there, but most of them are just kind of like, oh, you got the wah on again, you're doing that same kind of blues scale thing. And it's like, okay. You know,
well, you can see
there's
it
something in, creative about it.
Well,
me.
you can see it in those videos, and it's so hard to pinpoint what the real problem is. I mean, it does seem like obvious choices of what the problem are that he doesn't really compose the solos. He's sort of going for it and improvising it. It's a lot of shit that they've all planned beforehand. But also, it seems like you got Greg Fiddleman and Lars scrutinizing every bar.
Right.
And then Kirk does a bunch of shit, splits, and goes and like smokes a cigarette or does yoga or whatever. And then
two things that go very well together.
He's like doing the downward dog while smoking like six cigarettes. Well, he smokes cigars. I don't know. Maybe he's smoking a cigar.
Yeah. He smokes Marlboro Reds, no filter.
Or maybe he's smoking your butt. I don't know.
Wow. Yeah. Maybe he is. Easy, Kirk.
But the thing is, like, I don't know. It's like, so if Lars, who is an amazing arranger, but if they're sitting there just sort of piecing together in Pro Tools,
yeah,
you're going to lose something there too.
Yeah, you're losing the spontaneity of what you created, like, while because I've done that when recording leads. Like, I've sat there and like just done take after take, and just, you know, it's that art of improvisation where you're like just messing around. All of a sudden, something clicks. Like, okay, cool. I'm going to keep doing that part. Let me add to that, and then you kind of keep building off of that. It's a way to, you know, kind of build a part without necessarily having a full band around you. You just keep hitting record until you get something down cool.
Sure.
They do it in a year and a half in the life of Metallica when he's doing the Unforgiven solo.
Right.
I'm sure he had way more takes than we saw. But eventually, you know, you keep getting inspired. You keep, okay, that's a cool note I just hit.
And you keep getting pushed and like you keep looking. And it does seem like he seems to me in the Hardwired, like, making of videos, like, he seems a little disinterested, a little bored and tired, and he's just kind of, like, blasting through.
He probably also wasn't really pushed. They were like, hey, just give us some stuff we can work with, and then we'll piece it together.
That's my one, which Kirk has gone on record and has described Greg in an endearing way as a quote-unquote taskmaster. And okay. I think you can kind of see that in Greg a little bit. He's very much every day he's trying to move the project forward.
Right.
But it's not the way Bob was. When Bob was like, sorry, dude, this isn't cutting it. This isn't good.
Yeah.
And you're a great guitar player. You need to do something good.
Now, here's my question in regards to the Hardwired sessions. So, you know, let's say, now I don't know what their schedule was. I don't know if, like, you know, Rob was doing bass in the morning, Kirk would come in the afternoon, but if I was him, whenever I wasn't needed in the studio, I would be there just in the background listening and just coming up with stuff.
I agree.
Like, even if you're in the other room and you can get a headphone mix going and just sit there and just like start coming up with riffs. Like, yeah, you lost all this shit.
Well,
but just...
I think the problem is, I think he did do that for Death Magnetic, and all the things that he did compose, they ended up rejecting.
Yeah.
So I think maybe this time around, and God, how many, it's been 8 years.
Yeah.
He probably, and plus there is some speculation that he might be just having personal shit in his life.
Right.
Which is totally plausible and valid.
Yeah.
But this time around, he might have thought like, well, why spend all that time doing it if Lars and Greg are going to fucking scrutinize it and reject it anyway?
Yeah, that's true.
That's like an argument that's valid to me.
Yeah.
It's such a tough, strange problem in Metallica because Kirk Hammett is the shit. Like, if you go listen to, which we're going to talk about our top solos, like, the ones that are making our lists are some of the coolest solos ever, man.
Totally. I agree. And very well thought out, very musical.
They're well composed. They emotionally move with the music.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
We've just been missing that for a long time now, dude.
Yeah, for a long
15
time.
Years.
There's some cool stuff on Death Magnetic where he definitely like plays with the song and stuff, but a lot of it he does, it's like we always joke about like just like the Kirk Hammett like tricks. He like kind of falls back on his little tricks. Yeah, does that fast thing down the neck or clicks the wall on and starts doing the blues scale thing and when sometimes that works, you know.
Yeah. It works in Blackened, it works in Puppets. You know, like, it works in Creeping Death. There's like those little moments.
But, you know, a lot of times on Death Magnetic and especially on Hardwired, he kind of just, you know, he plays it safe.
Yeah, same.
He pulls out the little tricks he's got. And to me, there's just no creativity on that new record.
I totally agree.
With the exception of a few parts.
I totally agree.
And this isn't like a dogging Kurt segment. I just, you know.
I don't see it that way at all. I actually see it more as like, I think our frustration with what he's bringing to the table comes out of like so much love for what he's capable of.
Of course. And you know, it's a total, like we're on Team Kirk thing here because like I wanted him to
Me too.
Be able to shine on this record. Cause I think, I mean, I don't think there's anything insanely spectacular that Rob does on the record. He holds down the low end and it's great. And I think, I honestly think Hetfield is the star of the record and then Lars next. And
absolutely, 100%.
But I mean, yeah, Kirk, I was just really hoping for some really cool shit on this
Well,
record.
I think Hardwired is a better record than Death Magnetic.
Agreed.
And it was such a great opportunity. It's the only thing it's missing, in my opinion, whereas Death Magnetic's missing a few things, right?
Like, missing a few things,
it's,
yeah.
Some of it's a little overlong. His vocals are too dry.
Everything's too dry.
There are some production choices and some mastering choices make it difficult. So there's some things missing that don't have anything to do with Kirk. I do feel like the only thing missing from Hardwired is Kirk being at 100%.
I think that I would agree with you also 100%.
And that's okay, but...
That's fine. You know, like I said, there are some really good moments on there. He did some really cool stuff, but yeah, overall, that's the one thing lacking.
And I just got to reiterate that to me, it's like those three dudes, James, Lars, and Kirk.
Yeah.
For me, that's Metallica.
Totally.
Jason was taken away from me. I accept that. It's been a long time.
It's been a while.
We talked about it in our New Set episode. I've made peace with it, and I love Robert.
Yeah.
But Robert's definitely a hired gun.
Yeah.
Robert's...
on paper, maybe not, but I mean, to us, he's...
He's earned his place, right?
But, of course, yeah, of course.
But he's not like Kirk. Kirk, to me, is like one of the three main dudes for sure.
I mean, he was there on the first record. He was there with Cliff for three records. I mean, he's the dude.
He duked it out with them on the road.
Oh, for sure.
And he contributed some of my two riffs or solos to some of my. You guys heard me on the Black Album episode. Like almost every song except for "Of Wolf and Man," his guitar playing was just pound for pound blowing my mind.
Oh, I think that's one of his best shining record. Moments for sure. I mean, obviously. Almost every solo on Justice for All is fucking badass.
And that's why we're so hard on this stuff, is because we know what he's capable of.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the Justice stuff, I mean...
God, dude, to live is to die.
The technical part of that stuff was like...
Phenomenal.
I remember listening to that record going, I will never be able to do this. Ever. Not everything, but you know, like the really
fast
stuff.
Last few solos on One...
Oh yeah, totally.
The Blackened solo, dude.
The Blackened solo. I mean, the Dyer's Eve stuff. I mean, it's
Eve, unbelievable.
but I mean, all Master Puppet stuff, the Sanitarium solo. I mean,
pretty
the
much
Damage
every...
Inc. So I mean, there's nothing on. Now I guess you could say on Kill 'Em All, you've got a lot of songs. He's just
doing Dave's
parts,
or at least like the first like 16 bars.
Yeah, but then when you take especially. Ride the Lightning, Puppets, Justice, and the Black Album, those specifically, I mean, there's some, most of that stuff is really good.
Well, and when we do finally do our Load and Reload episodes, I mean, when they finally let Kirk play, like really play guitar, not just come in and do solos.
Right.
Because if you listen with headphones, they have James hard panned left and Kirk hard panned right.
Yeah.
The stuff... I mean, I'm going to get real passionate about that when we talk about
it.
About what Kirk brought to the table as just a holistically as a guitar player to those records.
Totally.
And I was reading an interview with him today where he was kind of like, I hate the way that those dudes kind of like downplay that era, but he was like, yeah, I was getting really into like blues and jazz and I'd kind of gotten away from like playing metal guitar. And I'm like, dude, that's some of my favorite guitar shit you did.
Well, and as you and I both know, I mean, as musicians, that's what you should do is grow and expand and expand your taste in music and try new things. You know,
totally.
Yeah, your fans might be a little bummed because you're not playing like really fast, but you're playing stuff that's tasteful. I mean, some of my favorite guitar work might be two notes. You listen to old B.B. King shit?
Or like Neil Young guitar playing?
Totally.
But here's the deal. Like, if he had come back to Death Magnetic with And Justice for All type shit, I could see, like, okay. Like, he had his little fun in the sun with kind of stoner blues rock. But the thing is, the Death Magnetic thing doesn't hold a candle to the Justice stuff.
No, I mean, I like a lot of leads on there. There's a lot of really cool things. But there's also stuff, like you said, that it just sounds like he improv some stuff. And they cut and pasted it together.
It's kind of off the floor stuff.
Yeah.
And like, quote unquote, in the moment. Like, that's, they always say that. Like,
I know.
We're more in the moment. Well, like, dude, it's not in the fucking moment. When Lars Ulrich.
Or let's pick a different moment then.
Where Lars Ulrich and Greg Fiddleman are bar by bar piecing together 40 takes.
Right.
That's not in the fucking moment.
Yeah, they definitely didn't do that on Master of Puppets.
I'm so mad at them.
Gosh.
I'm so mad.
You know, we used to like Greg a couple episodes back.
I still love him.
I know, he's awesome.
But in terms of Kirk, though, it's like, I'm in it. I'm on the ride for the long haul. Yeah. These are my dudes. We gotta. I hope we can all figure this out together for the next. For the next go around, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I think. Would you say his peak years of writing leads was the Black Album?
Yeah, I think that was his peak.
Yeah.
For composing leads.
Yeah, for composing.
But it's hard to call that a peak because I don't feel like what happened right after that was like a valley. No. I feel like it was almost even like staying on a peak but going to a different,
yeah,
a cooler mountain, like a different deal.
Totally.
It was a just
cooler
such a
mountain.
A cooler pizza.
Do the do.
Do the do.
I mean, dude, I mean, like, you know, I'm 38 years old now. I've been listening to Metallica since, you know, I was freaking 11 or something. And, you know, I'll still sit down and if I ever play these songs, like, I'm still playing parts that this dude composed in, like, the early to mid 80s on some of my favorite records. Like, it's long lasting. It stands the test of time.
I totally agree.
You know, like, as much as we might say we don't like the Hardwired stuff or Death Magnetic stuff or whatever, I mean, there's no doubt in our minds, and it goes without saying, that Kirk Hammett is a badass, and he's written some of the best leads in metal.
He's one of the best guitar players that ever lived. He's one of my favorite guitar players of all time.
Yeah.
So that just goes without saying.
Yeah, and him, at least for us, we kind of think, you know, his skill level has kind of diminished over the last few years. That's not to say that impact is tarnished either. I mean, that's what happens.
Not for me at all.
Yeah, you get older, or whether it's a thing where maybe he's had some abuse problems or something, you can't play like that forever. That's just the fact of the matter. You can't, you know, unless of course you're surfing with the alien,
which I do often. Oh, yeah. Here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Kirk might surf with the alien. He's a big surfer.
Is surfing with the alien like the new, like, Puffin the Magic Dragon?
Maybe. Hey, bro, you want to surf with the alien?
I don't know, man. Hardwire sounded kind of fucked up. Sounded like he was surfing with the alien a little bit too much.
Yeah, he probably was.
He's a big surfer.
Yeah.
So to wrap up the episode and to celebrate what we fucking love about Kirk, let's get into these favorite solos.
I agree.
So we're going to start with, we're going to go through each record and say what we think is the best solo. Maybe not our favorite, but what we think is the best solo.
Yeah. Overall, just general consensus.
Pound for pound.
Yeah. If you had to play one solo from the record for somebody to give them an example of Kirk Hammett's skill, you play them this. Might not be your favorite, but here's what it is.
Okay, so Kill 'Em All, I chose Four Horsemen.
Same.
Boom.
Hang on. In parentheses, Bridge.
Bridge is where it's at.
It is. There is the outro solo, but it's basically Mustaine's solo.
Sure.
But that Bridge solo is the part they added to the
which
song.
Which wasn't there before.
Exactly.
We're fucking linked up on this motherfucker. Okay, Ride the Lightning, I chose Creeping Death.
I chose Fade to Black.
Okay, because of the intro solo or the outro solo?
I mean, I love all of it, but the outro solo, dynamically, I mean, that thing just keeps going up and up and up. It's great.
It's
he
beautiful.
Plays really well with those chords. And I love that rhythm part that Hetfield's playing the whole time. And I thought Kirk did a fantastic job riding that around those basically three chords.
I don't want to go too much into bummer territory, but you know what the real moment to have a Fade to Black moment was in Hardwired that didn't really happen? Is Halo on Fire.
Oh, yeah. James,
by the way. James wrote that part.
He just bends the notes. Like,
but he could have done the...
Like, he takes this one note and bends it like six times. I'm like, go somewhere else. He could have gone that Fade to Black route. You're right, where it was like this beautiful little thing.
Okay. Okay.
Puppets.
Puppets? I chose Orion.
Me too.
No!
Oh, my gosh.
Get out!
I will not. It's my house.
Did we just become best friends?
We did. You want to go do Kung Fu in the garage? Yep.
Yeah.
Favorite non-pornographic magazine to masturbate to?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like his parts, his solos in that, like, I could sing them, you know?
Yeah.
He says so many cool moments in that song. And I know James takes a solo and there's the bass solo. Which I almost chose Disposable Heroes, but I went with Orion.
I was close.
And I will say, his Puppet solo is phenomenal, too.
Oh, of course. So Puppets is a tough record to pick a favorite lead, or at least what you think is the best lead, because, I mean...
Because Battery's Killer 2, and Sanitarium, good God.
Almost every... I would say every song, I love the leads on that record.
Okay, Justice, I chose To Live Is To Die.
Ooh, I chose Blackened.
Yeah.
I mean, as you heard at the intro to this episode, we came in right on that fast lead for Blackened. I mean... I am definitely attracted to the more ballad type solos on a lot of songs, like the Orion, like even the intro to Fade to Black, stuff like that. But I mean, this was, you know, it's the first song off Justice. When I first heard it, I was like, oh my God, this guy's a ripper.
Well, and I love the solos too, where it's like, where it kind of starts with like him and James doing the guitar mini shit.
Oh, that's
cool. And then it kind of go, Kurt can just go off.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. Good choice. I back it.
Thank you.
But To Live Is To Die, like, I could sing you that solo.
Oh, yeah. Sing it. No pressure.
Just like the Pied Piper.
Oh, it's David. Welcome back to the show. Black Album.
Black Album, Unforgiven.
Okay. Sorry, I have a grin on my face. I'm laughing because I'm also glancing up at my top five. And anyways, Struggle Within.
Okay.
I like that one a lot. And there's like multiple parts to it. I think it's really well composed, and I think he did some cool creative stuff that wasn't in just normal blues scale territory. Did some stuff that, like, I don't know. When I think about the solo, there's just some really cool parts in there. I think it's a good shining moment for him.
Yeah,
on
Black
record.
Album is kind of when he did kind of start introducing the more bluesy pentatonic stuff that would further culminate for sure on Load and Reload.
Totally.
But there's still some, man, the Black Album was tough because
it's a good combo of that blues stuff that would end up on Load and Reload, and there's still almost like leftover licks from Justice,
for
especially
sure. Oh,
especially on this solo.
But dude, Through the Never's great.
Yep. I almost put Through the Never.
Sabbath True, Rome. I mean, that record's so killer. Okay, Load, I chose Hero of the Day.
Ooh, good.
It's because it's a simple solo. It's not flashy, but I just feel like it serves the song so well.
Yeah.
The utility of that solo was so great to me.
Totally. I chose King Nothing.
Mm.
Because I felt on Load, it was kind of it's that blues thing he's doing. And to me, that was kind of one of the better ones. You know, I think there's really cool stuff on other songs as far as leads go, but as far as like this, and leads as far as like just little parts here and there. But like, as far as the full solo, King Nothing was the...
I do like how it ends that... And then it goes into that intro.
Yeah.
That drone-y thing.
Totally. So you sang another solo.
Yep. For Reload, I kind of went for a dark horse and chose Devil's Dance.
Devil's Dance, really?
It's got this really cool, like, wow, wow. Like, he ends the solo with this great, like, tremolo arm hit.
Yeah.
That sounds like he's just hitting the shit out of the guitar.
Probably was.
I don't know. Can a dainty orphan really hit a guitar really hard? I don't know if that's even within his realm of possibilities.
I don't know.
What'd you choose for Reload?
I almost went with Unforgiven 2.
Uh-huh.
Wait, did I just get that wrong? That's on Reload.
Yeah, track four, dude.
Sorry, this is what I struggle with sometimes. I don't have dyslexia, but...
You have the struggle within sometimes?
I have the struggle within sometimes. As I was saying Unforgiven 2, I glanced down at King Nothing, and all of a sudden I had Load in my head, so I was getting confused.
Okay.
I'm not trying to do another Outlaw Torn thing.
Well, I think you're doing it.
Fuck you. I chose Better Than You.
Yes!
That's also
Grammy Award winning Better Than
totally.
You.
It's also one of my favorite songs in that record.
Me too!
But, yeah, I mean, Kirk, I feel like on that record as a whole, that should have been the end of that bluesy scale era guitar playing of him. They should have expanded into something else on, well, Plain Anger, but Death Magnetic and Future Record. But, yeah, I think I like the solo Better Than You.
I think that song is fucking awesome. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and appeal to our listeners here. Write in and tell me what you don't like about it. Because
about Better Than You?
Yeah, I'm sincerely curious.
I love it. I think it's
awesome.
Is it
Master of Puppets? No. Is it fucking Hit the Lights? No.
Is it Hit the Lightning?
Is it Hit the Orion? Of course not. Is it the Black Puppet? No.
No. Damage Sanitarium? No, it's not.
But dude, it kicks ass. I think that song kicks ass.
I think this next album, we could both say our answer at the same time.
Question mark.
Solo?
We don't know. I don't know. And I was unwilling to listen.
Like,
I was unwilling to go through it today to see if there was a solo.
Skim the record, go about three quarters of it through. Well, we know that there's like guitar parts and stuff, but there's no like...
Best Kirk moment on St. Anger? You flush it out. You flush it out.
Yeah, that or guys, can we just go in there and
let's just
when they're arguing, he's like
we're not doing any good. We're not going to do any good just beating up on each other. Let's just go out there and just hash it out.
Yeah, James, that's my favorite Kirk
James
moment.
Is like, fuck you, Kirk.
All right, Death Magnetic.
I chose The Day Never Comes.
Me too.
boom.
I think that's the most melodic.
It's the beautiful highlight.
Solo that works with the chords perfectly.
Unforgiven 3 was a real close second for me.
Yeah, I agree.
For the same reason, is that I do feel like Unforgiven 3 felt kind of more composed.
There's some good stuff on All Nightmare Long as well.
I think there's really good sauce on the whole record, but I can speak collectively for every Metallica fan in the world. We were all just so excited to hear them kind of kicking ass again. That
yeah, totally.
I feel like I was more forgiving on the solo department.
Yeah.
Which takes us to Hardwired. I actually chose Halo on Fire.
Me too.
Holy shit. You gotta be kidding me.
Gosh, there's a reason we started this podcast together. So what we get the same? Four Horsemen, Orion.
Orion. Day That Never Comes and Halo on Fire.
Four of the ten, we got the same. Yeah, I don't love the little interlude solo going into the second verse. That's what we talked about earlier. It's just the most repetitive little. He could have got more creative.
In
that fade to black vein, but no, the rest of the lead stuff on that song is awesome.
I also really couldn't think of other I've listened to Hardwired a lot. I still love it.
I went through it again today just to like make sure I wasn't missing something.
There's nothing that memorable, dude.
I mean, I do love the solo from the song Hardwired. It's very short and very simple. It's very thrashy.
You dig that one.
Atlas Rise one is pretty cool.
I don't know.
It's not amazing, but it's, you know. But I would say Halo on Fire is probably my favorite one.
All right, so let's go into it. So now this is different than the list we just did, which we tried to basically say objectively what's the best solo.
Correct, yeah.
Now this is our top five personal favorite Kirk solos throughout his entire career.
Yeah. Do you want to read yours all the way down first and then go to mine, or go back and forth?
Yeah, let's do a full list.
Okay.
So I'll start with, you want me to go first?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, my number five is The Unforgiven 2.
Ooh, good choice. I almost had that on the other list.
Again, because I can sing it, and my favorite part of it is that, which he does when they started doing, I guess they started doing it again because they started doing this like fan request tour.
Right.
And they requested that one. And he kind of like got the first of it right, but then on that,
didn't get it really?
No. He went for a thing that he approximated it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it hurt my feelings. Number four, Fade to Black.
Ooh.
Because that intro solo is, to me, iconic.
Yeah.
See, that's why it's number four.
Beautiful harmonies, by the way.
I think we just explained why that's number four. Number three, I had to go with Ride the Fucking Lightning, dude.
Ooh, nice, nice.
Because it's thrash, it's fast, it's got the tapping, which, by the way, they've been playing it live.
I know.
Which I'm so glad they dig that one up, because that's a motherfucker of a song.
It is.
To play, to sing, the solo's killer. Okay, number two, again, keeping it on Ride the Lightning, man. Creeping Death,
dude. Creeping Death, yeah. I knew that would be in your top five.
Because guess what else you can sing for that?
I can't go that high.
I mean, shit. All right. Number one.
What's your number one?
What do you think it is?
Your number one?
Yeah. What would you guess? We won't take too much time on that, but what would you guess?
Trying to figure out if it is in the load reload era.
It's not a surprise.
Not a surprise.
The shot clock's running out, bro.
I'm going to say, we already said Orion on the last list. Master of Puppets?
Nope. The Unforgiven.
Dang it. Okay.
Kind of an obvious choice, right?
Kind of an obvious choice. But
it's just, I mean,
what a freaking solo.
We're lucky that we actually have a document of it being crafted.
Yeah, totally.
But it starts clean. Again, we won't do it again.
You can sing, yeah. I think everyone listening knows you can sing Kirk solos. But that's obviously, he's crafted things that good that you can sing it.
I'm just saying that that's part of my criteria is like if it's lyrical and singable.
Yeah. Just best of luck singing them as beautiful as us.
Including Kirk Hammett.
All right, you ready for me?
Yeah. All right. Wait, hold on. Okay, I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Number five, Sanitarium.
Yeah.
And I would just say the whole song. I think every lead on that record, or I'm sorry, on that song
including the little harmonic. Ding, ding.
I guess you can, yeah, sure, you can call it that. But I mean, from the intro solo, like similar to the Fade to Black one. Can't go that high.
There's a whistling portion.
You could sing that solo. Same kind of deal. Number four, Ride the Lightning.
Nice.
I'm on board with that one, too. I love that one. I think there's some great thrashy parts in it, great melodic stuff where he follows the chords well.
I agree.
Number three, I think you'll dig this one, To Live Is to Die.
Nice.
I love that solo. After those little... Yeah, there's that whole deal. And then the whole bridge section is my favorite lead on that song.
On the A minor
thing? So yeah, after the acoustic part, then there's a little swells, and then the drums come in.
It's the guitar harmony. Is that guitar harmony?
Negative.
Maybe not. Negative. Okay, negative on guitar harmony.
But it's a really cool solo. Follows those chords that Hetfield's playing. It's like the
it's like A minor, G,
E minor, F.
F, yeah.
And just, he did a great job playing around those chords. Number two, Disposable Heroes.
Okay, cool.
There's a shitload of lead in that song, and it, to me, never lets up. It never gets boring. I never go, okay, let's get back to the next verse.
That song is a thrash masterpiece.
That song rips, and it never ends. You think it's going to end.
It's still playing right now.
It's still going. They might still be tracking still it right playing. Now. Yeah. When you think it ends, it's like, bum, 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 bum. You're like, man, what a great song. It's right back into
oh,
it.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God. But no, I love those solos. And the number one, we're matching up again, The Unforgiven.
Yes.
I think that is Kirk Hammett's finest moment. And there's probably people out there going, oh, well, it's not a fast solo, or it's whatever.
Who gives a shit?
I don't give a shit. As musicians, we listen for something that's composed really well.
And, totally.
And I think that this is probably it's his finest moment as a lead player.
100% agree. No problem. I'm not outlaw torn in any direction on that.
Hey, man. Nothing else matters after that list. Let's just thank Bob Rock for pushing him hard enough to get that out of him.
I know, man. It's so cool.
It's so cool.
That's what they're missing. If Greg is listening, which I'm sure he is, Greg, next time around in the next 25 years, which I know you're dealing with a bunch of rich rock stars. I get it.
Totally get it, man.
They're in a different place than they even were when they were making the Black Album.
Oh, yeah.
But he needs someone to kick his ass.
He does. Get him out of the ocean. Get him off the surfboard. Let him go there in the morning and
look,
find
his
peace.
He may be surfing with the alien that morning.
He might be surfing with the alien all the time. We don't know.
We don't know yet. Yet. Hard copy. It's doing a whole episode on this.
Hello, Joe Satriani.
Hello, Joe.
Hey, Joe. What are you doing with that gun in your hand?
My hands are sweaty.
Wow, that escalated.
So here's the deal. We want to hear about your top five Kirk solos.
Top five Kirk solos. Please email them to us, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. I'm curious to see what people have. And I'm curious to see if someone's going to pawn off something on Saint Anger as a lead. Guess what? Email not answered.
Yeah. what's the line from Halo on Fire? Prayers of heaven, return to sender.
Return to sender.
it's not one of my favorite Hetfield lyrics.
No, not really. Well, either.
Prayers cannot get through.
Return to sender. Yeah. If you think you can pawn off a Saint Anger part as a lead, it's either going to return to sender or delete that. So.
Yeah. So send it in.
So send away. No, I'm curious to hear what some other people's are, and I'm curious to see if people are going to mistake Hetfield's parts for Kirk's. They shouldn't.
I think if you're listening to this show, you're probably in pretty deep.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we're in deep.
Although the Jody from Podcast Rock City, I mean, he's telling me either on the episode or before we started rolling that he actually thinks that even if you're not like kind of a hardcore fan, that this show is something you could dig on. I don't know.
That's cool.
I think if that's true, that's great.
Hey, if you're a casual Metallica fan and you just like to tune into the show for fun, let us know. We'd like to hear from you too.
We have gotten listeners who maybe were hardcore, but who have like mellowed out, and for whatever reason, they found our show and like the show has inspired them to go.
Yeah, that's
true. Dig deep, which I think is fucking awesome.
I've had a couple of friends hit me up and tell me that same thing. They're like, man, I haven't listened to that band in a long time, but I'm like diving into the records again.
I think that's probably the biggest compliment we could get.
I think so. I mean, I've never really taken a break from these records since I've discovered them. You know, I can't even say I took a break from Load and Reload. I just didn't really get into them at first. And I mean, it wasn't until like a year ago, I really started like, okay, I'm gonna listen to that. And then we got really close. It was like, okay, I'm diving into these records full force.
Yeah.
Which is why I can say I like the solo better than you.
I feel like when we go to our show for this tour, I got to get like a Reload era, like Ninja Star shirt.
Yeah. And by the way, we have mentioned about going to, a Hardwired show
in Atlanta.
We were talking about Atlanta, possibly St. Louis, but things aren't working out in our favor, so there's a good chance now, if you live in Detroit, I think we're going to try to drive up to that one, because it's only about a 7-hour drive.
July 12th, which is a Wednesday, Detroit.
Yeah.
Which I think is the last show of the American tour.
Okay, well, we will confirm this maybe in the next episode, but that's looking like the show we're going to go to, and again, we're going to plan on doing like a tailgate episode, so if you're going to Detroit, keep an eye out for us in the parking lot. And when it gets closer, we'll probably tweet like our location and or put it on Instagram and all that stuff so you can find us.
We'll be on all the socials.
Dude, we'll be so social.
We're so social.
Yeah.
Speaking of socials, all the
nice segue. You can follow us on Instagram, Metal Up Your Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, Metal Up Your PC. I'm sorry, Metal Up Your Cast. We get that wrong sometimes. Metal Up Your Cast.
You get that wrong sometimes.
You did it the last time.
Oh, did I really?
Yes, you did.
Oh, shit.
Okay, Outlaw Torn. Facebook.com/MetalUpYourPodcast, and you can always donate at Patreon.com/MetalUpYourPodcast, and that's about it.
Yeah, you know where to email us, right? Did we just say the email?
We kind of said it. MetalUpYourPodcastShow@gmail.com. I think cool. Everyone knows my name.
Everyone knows all of our bullshit.
But we're gaining new listeners, so welcome to the show. We're happy to have you here, and that's where you can find us on social media and email.
Yeah, and we kind of say this every show. We're not going to harp on it too much, but we are growing a lot, and we're super grateful and thankful. It's been real exciting. It's so cool, man. Thanks to everyone who takes the time to listen to the show.
Yeah, it's truly mind-blowing. And the next few episodes are going to be recording remotely because I'm about to hit the road and Clint's doing some dates and stuff. So going to do some nice remote episodes from whatever city we're both in. So
we'll see you out there on the road.
Yeah, see you on the road. Actually, maybe they could, you know, we could, if you have days off, you know, I might go find a bar, throw a couple tweets out like, hey, come buy me a beer.
If you guys want to, where can they find us? Like
so, personally?
Like, Ethan has a website. I think it's ethanluck.com.
Ethanluck.com. It has my music, photography, all that stuff. But
where's the best place they can see when we're on tour? Is it like Instagram or something?
Kingsofleon.com. Oh, I tech geez. For Kings of Leon, so that's how you're going to find us.
Ethan and I are always on the road, and like, if we're ever near you guys, if you guys see where we're at, you come to a show, we could probably get you tickets. Maybe if we couldn't get you tickets, we could at least have a hang with you somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, with the touring I do get a good amount of days off, so, you know. Or maybe, who knows, maybe I'll get to a day off and find a cool bar to go to, and I'll just start doing some Instagram stories and be like, hey, walking into this
bar.
But
your tour you're about to start doing is European, though, right?
The first one I'm doing is U.S. So I'm starting in San Diego, and then it goes to like...
3 weeks?
It's like a little over 3 weeks. It's all along the south of the U.S. So it's like San Diego, Phoenix, and like into Texas and that stuff, then up the East Coast. So
cool.
The next leg of that's like later in the summer.
Yeah, you guys should reach out to us. We would love to like meet up with some of you.
Yeah, we've had people reach out before, like, hey, we'd love to buy a beer sometime or whatever. We love free beer.
Free beer tastes the best.
It tastes delicious. All right, well, I think we've hyped ourselves enough.
Let's talk more about me and you and what we do and where we're going to be and what we like to drink that's free.
All about us.
Well, no, thanks, dudes.
Yeah, thanks for listening to the Kirk Hammett episode. And Kirk, I know you're listening. We love you, dude. And we hope if you're dealing with anything, it gets better. And we want you to be the best player you can be.
We'll see you here next week at Metal Up Your Podcast HQ.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye, podcast.
Hello. Well, now you did Dave, I got to do Torben.
I'm sorry. All right.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening, everybody. It was great.
Well, goodbye, podcast.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.